Okay, so I will invite Twist Albert so that we can get a start. So please bring your mind back to your body and establish yourself. So, dear friends, today is January 11, 2011. How is everybody practice? Once in a while, we have to look back at our practice. Sometimes we oversee our practice, so it's important to remind us constantly in our to see how much progress we on the path. It's okay to be up and down on the path. That's why we practice. Is the movement up and down on the path is to see that how this is a test or a measure to see how much you have how far you're on the path. So this is a measure. Some day you have a lot of joy and other day you have a lot of blue. That's okay. Because as a human, we have our physical and our mental and psychological. It's also an interrelated effects of the external weather also. So that's why it's to allow to see that how much we relate to the external world. The earth, the fire, the winds, that's the four great elements that compose that this body. Earth, fire, water, winds. It's allowed to see that how much we relate the interdependent horizons, teachings. We are not separate from the outside external, but normally we see ourselves as a separate entity from the external. You see that? And the more you further on your path, it allows you to see the more insight you have in the practice, the more it allows you to see that how much you relate to the external. So now you don't run away from the external, but you see that you relate to the external. So when we see that, then that's where insight is born, and how much you are careful in whatever you do. Because the insight of the Buddha or the insight of self is a reality that brings us, the more you practice, the more it brings us close to the reality of internal inner reality and external reality. It's very important to have those insights so you can make the reconcile with the reality.
Well, after Saturday's Day of Mindfulness has been a very wonderful time. And then I got home and read about the Gifford shooting, the shooting in Tucson. Mm. And I saw myself doing this and realizing this is not good for you, but I had all this sort of, I had all my mindfulness stuff I was carrying. I think I depleted it pretty quickly by reading the news and then seeing some, you know, sort of some of our relatives a Facebook posting that was sort of like, this is horrible. I know, I loathe Democrats and I loathe everything they believe, but this is wrong. And I was just like, okay. And so all this stuff, like I saw my mind just filling up with all these things. And then by Sunday and yesterday, I started to realize how the external, how I was grieving that whole thing along with so many, I think, other people. And yet how to do that enough but not overdo it.
Thank you for sharing that. That is, so when we see something that happened terribly into society and we see that how, and look back and see how is that reflect our own psychological stage. And when you see that, how, and then we can see how much fear we have on our society. You see, we live in a society that there is a lot of things going on. There is a lot of violence going on. So that's why on the path of scenes is very important. It's the first time that the practitioner or the bodhisattva able to see the suchness of reality, the suchness of things.
Suchness?
Suchness.
Okay.
Of reality, suchness of things. The first time. Even though along the path, you know, the path of accumulation is the path of preparation. It is the path, it's preparation for all of this. Accumulates all good needs, good thing for this to happen. For the practitioner, for the first time, for them to see this naked reality. And that's why they have a lot of tremendous joys. They call it tremendous joys. So now they really enter the path of bodhisattva now. Because the path of seeing is when they're able to see directly with the naked, with the eye directly see it, because they see the none, now they move into the space of non-conceptions. And they have a clear vision. Because normally our vision is blinded by many wrong perceptions in a relative world. There's wrong perceptions of reality. Because we normally see things in our own, in the form. So that's why in Diamond Sutra and to Buddha tell Subhuti, he said that wherever there is form, there's deceptions. Wherever there is form, there's deceptions. Wherever there is perceptions, there's deception in the Diamond Sutra. And that is how we normally operate ourselves on that level of stage, on that level, on a relative level. We operate ourselves on a on something form that we're able to see. And then that's why we have a lot of wrong perceptions about people, about many other things. Wrong perceptions. We don't see beyond that. And then when we see that on that form and we label it, and then we get caught into that, and it's become a samsara, a circle of assistance, a circle of seeing the wrong things. And normally that's how normally we operate. So that's why we have to be very careful when we, in our speech, when we label something. So we have to be very careful. Nicole, you seem to have questions?
Yes, two questions.
Mm-hmm.
On the practice, sometimes I have trouble figuring out, like, what should I be thinking about that
mm-hmm.
day?
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing that I tried since the day of mindfulness is I haven't had television for a long time,
mm-hmm.
so I don't watch it much, but then I was able to get one channel. So I was watching it, and I thought I would do television watching meditation.
Okay.
And what happened was I was sort of watching myself watching television. And it's like, it was very different. So is that... actually really meditation?
Oh, television. Yeah, so now we turn into a meditation, a TV meditation.
Well, I was seeing it, but the way I was looking at it was totally different because I was sort of watching myself interacting
mm-hmm.
with it. And going,
so when you watch TV, you have mindfulness and you can see many things happen externally, internally, you see? External out of TV is just like, is that real or, you know, it's just only put it together image.
Yeah.
And you see?
So I saw myself sort of sitting out there just watching this box
mm-hmm.
in just bare awareness that there was all this stuff going on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then every so often I would catch myself getting caught up in it and then not caught up in
mm-hmm.
it, sort of a thing. And I thought, maybe that's TV meditation.
Yeah, yeah.
TV mindfulness.
TV, you have only one channel. If you have more channel, then it's different. And you see how your mind will be operate on that.
I only have one channel, and I don't like it.
And you see, can you see? You can see how your mind operate when you have different main channel.
Hmm.
And sometimes you just flick back and forth constantly. See how your, when I watch TV, I watch my mind. And I see how my mind is turned off and on and, you know, changed constantly. Because they, you know, this channel you lie and the next channel and you was, you know, just turn off and on and many, many. So you see your monkey mind.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you see your monkey mind operating when you watch TV. Because many external attractions and many external disturbances. Your mind.
Well, how do you pick things to think about?
It's we call selective practice. So there is some things that is good for you to contemplate. You know, good quality. So you selective practice is you select something that is toward a good seed in you. You know. But sometimes it's your mind, you resist, your mind resists of whatever you select. Because you want one thing, but the other thing is more attractive. And that's why you have to bring in mindfulness, isn't this good for me? So you have to be selective of what you watch, so that it's not watering the best seeds in you. You have to watch TV, you have to be very careful. Very. Because especially if you have cable, you have a lot of channel. And mostly TV, they watch many good best seeds in you. Mostly is desires. If you look at TV, everything is desire. It's what the seeds of desire in you. And desire is like burning, it's like fire. So that's why I wrote this, this lửa dữ bừng bừng cháy bốn bên, cô hồn nóng bức hộ tiền miên. So that's to say that as if it's translated here, as if a fire is raging on all four sides, a hungry ghost ceaselessly suffering from the heat. The heat here, suffering from heat here, is the heat of desire. You remember, if you sit back and reflect on that, how much desire is burning us. Desire is like a fire. Imagine that if you desire something and you don't satisfy, you feel very agitated. And that kind of desire is tied in us into samsara world. This kind of desire. But as human, I tell you, sexual desire is the most burning in our world. The most burning physical desire is the most burning demon. Mm-hmm. Hungry ghost ceaselessly suffering from the heat. From the heat, that heat is the heat of desire. And desire is the million things you can be desire. Desire to be success on your job is a desire, right? But it can be healthy and can be unhealthy. We can be crippled from that kind of a desire. A desire to have a beautiful clothes is a desire. So as a human being, we have millions of desires. And all desire is burning. Doesn't matter what kind of desire you burn, you have. It's like coal, charcoal. It's burning. And imagine that if you don't satisfy that desire, and the moment that you pass away, and that's how we rebirth. That desire keep us in the samsara world, in a rebirth. We born here because of our desire. We come to this world in the wisdom of the Buddha. Because of desire that we born here. Desire many things. But like for angel, they have a better desire than us. They born to the born into the heaven. But still desire. But their desire is much better than us. So when you look, contemplate your desire every day and see how that burns you in different ways. How is that burning? Endlessly burning us.
So then if we don't want to come back, we need
don't
to
buy a ticket.
Trying not to. I'm trying real hard, let me tell you. quit it. I'm going to keep laughing. If we don't want to come back and have to do the same thing all over again because we didn't fix it in this life,
yes,
then we need to look at our desires. You just said every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah. Okay. Look at that desire. How is burning you in different way?
Okay.
That's how I meditate. I meditate, I always burn myself. Today I spent many hours in my meditations, and I look at this.
Okay. What if you don't know what it is?
That's why many people don't know what it is. What they desire, but they don't know. They got burned into that, and they don't know it. You see? Violence happened because of this desire. You see? Violence because that desire is not satisfied. So they get themselves into trap, and they do this violent act. For example, that guy shoot the representative. He have some desire, but he don't achieve. He was kicked out of school. So he might have some desire, and that his desire is not being recognized, not being satisfied. So he just go out and shoot. He been managed by this desire. He been blind by his desire. That's what it is. And once our desire is not fulfilled or satisfied, we are very angry. Right? That's leading us to angry, leading us to violence. So when you meditate, you look at that and you see. If you have a clear vision, that's what it's like. Clear vision. And when you're able to see it, you slow down. Because all of this is hurting you. You see, all of this is hurting you. But we don't know. We are the author of our own suffering. But we don't know. See, that's why the Buddha say that we are ignorance because of that. We don't know that we are our own authors, our own creator of suffering. We normally just go external, either condemn, blame, or complain.
What's the difference between a desire and a goal?
A goal? You have some good desire, some bad desire, but a goal, you set a goal to achieve. Normally, that goal, in a common sense, it have to be a good goal. But sometimes, you know, like against it, for example, they set a goal to go to drop the vow. But that goal is not a good goal. Right? But they set a goal. So a goal is something that you to be achieved, or to attain that, to satisfy that. So a goal can be good, or a goal can be bad. For example, if you have a, but the more you walk on the path, you let your goal be this. As it is. For example, you have so you have an aspiration. So aspiration is different from desire than aspirations to be liberated from your own suffering, for example. So you are searching for a teacher, you are searching for an environment that helps you to achieve that aspiration. Or you can have a vow. So a vow is different. A vow can be a good vow, but can be a bad vow. Mm-hmm. Vow itself is neutral. So how you put your attention into that, that's the difference. Attention to achieve that. So I say around that is to see that, to reflect on that. And when we reflect on that, so as a practitioner, we have some aspirations. To, on the surface level, is to transform our, to achieve some kind of joys and happiness, or some peace. That's for personal achievement. But later on, as you move further, progress on the path, you have to share that with everybody. Generosity. share your happiness with everybody, share your joy with everybody. So once you reach the path of scenes, you slowly, you let go all your selfishness. All the selfishness. You have to be perfect in your own generosities. You have to let go all in order for you to reach the perfectness. The moment you still hold on, you're not. You have to let go. So it's become an evenness, equanimity. So when you reach the path of seeing, you are in touch with the deep reality in your own. You see reality. You experience directly. You don't see directly. Experience directly. And when you see that, you experience that. You never return. You not step back or you not fall back. When you able to see that, you not. You still have karma to work on. You have some other negative stuff to work on, but you don't fall back. When you see that, when you experience that, you confirm your visions of seeing reality. So now you really enter the path of gray beans. And so you enter the first stage or the first booming call. This is stage or ground. First bhumi. Mm-hmm. Bhumi is Sanskrit word. And it's translated as stage of the ground or level. You enter the first level, the first ground of the Bodhisattva. So, and then you experience a joyous, extremely joyous, happy. And the Bodhisattva purify, totally purify the aspirations of attachment and habitual tendencies. They purify that. And in the text they say that the practitioner of the Bodhisattva can enter into or arise from 100 samadhi or concentrated meditations in a single instant.
Say that
again? They say that they enter into or arise from 100 samadhi meditations in one instant. So they just jump into one instant. They jump into meditative concentrations 100 times faster. That's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard. Because what? Because the mind is in concentration, in one pointedness. So once your mind is in one pointedness, that means you have a very grounded into meditative concentrations. So that's why they've been accumulate all of this, you see, that's been accumulate and they've been prepared for this moment. That's why they have the path of accumulation and the path of preparations. So without those, this one movement cannot be happy. You see? So that's why in Buddhism we have, in Zen Buddhism they call instant enlightenment. You see that? Mm-hmm. You see how that interconnect? Dongo, mm-hmm. I mean, in the moment, one moment will clear of hand, that person become enlightened because they have all this preparation. And there's also say that this, they can see 100 Buddha face to face. 100 Buddha face to face the first time. And when you say this, you can look back why they see 100 Buddha. Just that's the number of symbolic number face to face. Because they are in the presence, fully in the presence. And they're able to see. The Buddha here, you now have to know what it means. He's Buddha. He's the awakened one. So able to see that energy of awakening. The first time in the practice. And they got blessings by this Buddha. Blessings by 100 Buddha. Blessing here is to confirm that you're on the path. See? So if you read the Lotus Sutra and Buddha come to touch your hands, to bless you, to confirm that you're on the path. And they say that they can travel to 100 Buddha realms. Why? Because they're in your presence. In total presence. When you are in the presence, you can travel anywhere. For example, if you are in presence here, you can see, I say Vietnam, and you can just have a picture of Vietnam in front of you right away. Right? If I say Arizona, if you have a picture of Arizona right away in front of you. How am I travel that fast? You see? When you are in fully present. You clearly visions, clearly see that. And they say that cause 100 world system to shake, because when you become enlightened, the world is shaking. When the Buddha become enlightened, the world is shaking. All Mara is free. When you enlighten, all Mara is free. All Mara is afraid. Shaking. Rings, the bell is ringing, say that there is an enlightened one coming. Shaking. Shaking here is joy. The world is in rejoicing to see there is some one being that appear on the earth that bring happiness to everybody. That's why the earth is shaking. You see, you don't see the earth shaking, but something miraculously, something big happened. The earth is shaking. Either to a warning, either a happy celebration. Isn't that that? Because when you become enlightened and all the obscuration is transformed. You see, all the obscuration is transformed. And obscuration is all this in Mara. And this is all in our mind. See? And in the mind is the creator. In Avatam Sutra, the Buddha says, mind is the painter, mind is the creator. So our mind is very important in the Buddhist practice. We work with our mind a lot. And all of this is what we say being studied here is to work with our mind. Yeah. Mind psychology is to work with our mind. The energy of mind. And once this mind come into change, realize its own reality, then it's shaken. And they say that once we, on the path of seeing, we can bring 100 being into complete maturity. So what is it? Here is what it means. Once you're able to see the path, you're on the path. You can bring many. All of the absolutism can be into maturity. Not only 100, but many into maturity. That means you're able to completely transform of these obscurations, anger obscurations, madness of this, into maturity, meaning into its own fruit. We transform totally. And how we see, we change, if we reach this path, you change our life totally. We change our life. You at ease with yourself this time. You really see the path. You confirm the path that you are on. You trust in the love. And they say that you're also able to see 100 eons of the past. And 100 eons of your future. You know, this is a symbolic, because when your mind, for example, when your mind is at clarity, you're able to see everything. Just like a mirror reflecting. You can see your past, you can see your future. You can see what you have been created. That's how powerful it is when you reach this path. And we all can. We all can. But sometimes we fall back. That's why we are here. But you know, we have this right environment, I think. Many years, many life, we will continue this path. And we already plant the seeds, you know. Seed. And the seed is growing. Yes, you know, it's growing. It germinates. You have the seed sprout and germinate. So when you're able to see, really confirm your path, you are ready. So this is only the first booming, the first level of the Bodhisattva. Many, we will study more. Many bhumis, 10 bhumis, 10 level. And each bhumi, each level, each ground, your view of seeing become clear, clear, clear. Because you confirm yourself already. You have confidence, unshakable. Later on we have a bhumi we call unshakable.
So, you haven't. Do I understand correctly?
Mm-hmm.
This is the first stage, but you don't get to the first stage without a lot of preparation.
Yes.
First.
Mm-hmm. That's why we've been studying for the last few months. We've been studying the path of accumulations. You know, all the mindfulness, the four foundation of mindfulness. All that prepare for this to ripening. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of mind, mindfulness of the phenomena, all that kind. And you have all the faith, the six powers, the strength, all that is preparation for this, for it to be ripening over the door. And once you're able to see this, you say that you're able to open 100 doors to the Dharma. 100 doors to the Dharma. So in Buddhism we have 84,000 Dharma Dharma. 84,000.
There's a lot more doors to open.
No, but once, you know, all the teaching of the Buddha is interconnected. If you open one door, you open 84 doors. Mm. But this is a symbolic here. You say 100, you can't open 100 doors to the Dharma. You can't enter 100 doors to the Dharma. But according to the teachings of interconnectedness, that you open one door, you open all the doors. For example, you enter this house, you can open all the many doors in this house. That's reality. You can open this door, you know, all the doors here. Once you open, enter one Dharma door. So when you open your eye, here is Dharma door, is the eye. It's the Dharma. Open your eyes. The eye of the Dharma. The eye that you're able to see is clearly. Normally we have so many things that blind our scenes. You see? Blind our scenes. So you can enter one door, you can enter 100 door. We have a universal door chapter of Avalokiteshvara. Universal door chapter. And all this door is to antidote to your own our own illness. We have 84,000 kind of illness. That's why the Buddha to speak one Dharma door is to antidote with our own of one illness that we have. Each person have different illness. In our way of seeing things. When we look at ourselves, we can see that. We can see what weakness we have, what illness we have. Not only the illness, only the physical, but there's mental illness. Grasping is one kind of illness. So all the Buddha, whatever the Buddha say or teach, is to antidote all of this here. So whenever you completely heal, then you don't need this Dharma door. Right? So if you are healthy, you don't need any medicine. The same thing. When our body and our mind is totally healthy, we don't need any medicine. So medicine or Dharma door is for those who are in illness. But those are who are healthy, you don't have it. So even all the trainings that we have is to antidote our own weakness, our own illness. But when you don't have that, you don't need. If you need, then you're sick. So any question on the path of sins? So the path of sin, the first thing is choice, the tremendous amount of choice on the path. Because imagine that you see the reality, you see yourself, experience that, how joy you are, how happy you are. You've been waiting, you've been, you know, practiced for a long time, been prepared for a long time, and now you encounter it, you directly see it. So it's the most happiest person, happiest moment in your path. And you can encounter this all. If you practice, you truly practice, you encounter this moment. And you never fall back from the Dharma, from your practice. You will be, it will be with you forever. Wherever you are. But go through this, there's a lot of challenge. A lot of challenge. This is something that is very value, very precious. Then you have to pay the price.
I have a question. For someone who gets to this stage, mm-hmm. is it kind of like the other stages where this might happen for a moment and then you lose it and then you have to get back to it? Is it the same kind of
no
challenge, or this is more?
More.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is like temporary, but you sometimes you have a glimpse of it. But this one you confirm. You see it, right? You confirm the joys that you directly experience. You are content with it. The other joys that we have are very momentary, right? Sometimes in our meditations, there is a moment that we have some really at peace with ourselves. And then after our meditation, and where's go? It's been job, you see? It's just like a glimpse of our joys. But this one is more confirmed with yourself. You confirm it. You have confidence in it.
So we were talking earlier about the influence of the external.
Mm-hmm.
How is the influence of the external
into this?
Yeah.
Because now you see, you make a reconciliation with the internal and external. You don't see yourself, because when you see that, you still are in the realm of conventional. You see conventional and non-conventional, but now you can reconcile both. You see, you make a connection between inner and outer. So there is no longer a separation. No longer a separation between outer and inner. Bill?
Is that like reactivity to external things? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, what do you mean reactivity?
Like you see something and react mm-hmm. emotionally.
You mean on a conventional sense?
I guess. Like she was talking when she read the thing on Facebook and mm-hmm. somebody was negative and she reacted to that mm-hmm. emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to this level, you don't have that.
Oh, you have a lot of calmness already. You see what it's been, you see the connection. You have a lot of calm and clarity. You see many things happen, but you're still above that.
Right.
You still see everything is there, you know, form is still form there. But now you see different. Last time I say that, 30 years ago, I practiced, the one practitioner, 30 years ago he practiced, he see mountain as mountain. But after 30 years, he see mountain as mountain. But now it's different. It's the same thing.
I like that one.
Yeah. That's what he, after he see this here, you see, is what I see, I told you last time in the last class, and this is what it is. After 30 years, he see mountain as mountain, but he see through the eyes of non-conceptions. After 30 years of practice. Before 30 years, mountain is mountain. After 30 years, mountain is mountain. Same. But he dwells in the reality.
So it's going to take us 30 years to get here?
Lucky, I think. You're
lucky. No, but it can be a moment. You know, this can be a moment. You can jump into that reality. It can be a moment. But it can be 30 years. Okay. It depends how thick your ignorance is. Our ignorance is.
Seriously, though. If you get to this point of calm and mm-hmm. clarity,
mm-hmm.
is it possible to lose it?
No.
Or once you get here,
you confirm. You confirm.
So if you go back and forth mm-hmm. in your practice, then you're not here.
You still go back to preparation and accumulation.
Preparation and what?
Accumulation.
I kind of missed the beginning, but I kind of gather that there's a lot of preparation mm-hmm. to get to here in your lifetime. So say, as a kid or a teenager, whatever, you've done something like really, really horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Can you still get to that point?
Yes, but mm-hmm, you can still get to that. But you have, once you get to this, you still have to practice to purify that. You can see the path, but then you have to work hard to purify. You see it, you confirm that, oh, there is light, there is something, you attain that. But then, because on the path you have been accumulated, you have done so many terrible things, But now you change, but you still have. According to the law of karma, or the law of cause and effect, you have to pay that. But now you're accepting, you're working on it. Now you turn everything to make that insight.
So does what you just described have to do with, I can't think of the name of the murderer that the Buddha accepted.
Mm-hmm. Umalakala.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He's a serial killer.
So that...
You see, and after he become a monk and he become an arahat, but he have to pay it, and then he go to beg and people just throw at him rocks. You know, sometimes he come back home with the blood on his hand, but he accepting it. He don't resent. Before, I will kill you back or something. Mm-hmm. But now, I work and I know what I have done. Mm-hmm. You see, someday he come home with an empty bowl. Mm-hmm. And every other monk have to share with him for the food. But he happy. He's still happy. Because he already see the path. Here. He see the path.
If he became enlightened, right?
He become an arahat.
Arahat.
Arahat is... is into the path already, but he see that he had accumulated a lot of negative deeds before he become enlightened. So now he become a total receptive acceptance and work with that. And he not blaming why I every day I go to bag, other monks have food, I just only receive rocks and and bowl. Yes, poor he does. Me. Poor me. He don't go to say, poor me, you know, complain and, you know. But he accept. But he have a lot of friends. The Buddha, no. You see? That is the example.
What you're saying about... forgiveness, is that the same thing as, like, you hear stories about, let's say someone's family gets murdered, mm-hmm. and the survivor is able to forgive the murderer. Mm-hmm. Is that the same thing, or is that different?
But we learn the lesson. Forgive, but learn the lesson. Not to do it again, or not to harm anybody. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you come here, some of you... You might have, you like to learn, you have to see the path, but you still have many other things to work with family. Mm-hmm. That's what you already commit, you have already promised, you know, with, you know, children, you have many other things, but you see the path and say that. That's why you accept it and work with it the best that you can. You not complain, you know, condemn, something happened. When you see the path, you become a total acceptance. A total receptive. You are not passive. You are not pessimistic. You always strive for and work for it. That's the difference. They see the path, they see the path here, but they have many things to work on, many negative defilements to transform. But they never fall back. They not fall back. That's the difference. So if you have some claims on your path, on your meditations, then you know that you have the light, the torch that's set on your path. Then you have confidence. You have a total faith with wisdom. So you have all this negative deed, but because you have wisdom, we have confidence. So they become a non-striving. They work a non-striving. And you see that, like, those people who see the path, they work very diligently for the benefit of sentient beings and themselves. You see Dalai Lama work a lot for his country, for his people, for himself. But not a selfish work. Like Thay, 84 years of he travel, you look at his schedule, it's full. Mm. And I always imagine that how can he have that energy to travel? Myself, I travel to Vietnam and Hawaii and I collapse. Yes, because the time different, and time lag, time check. What is that?
Jet lag.
And you see, he go to Korea, he go to Thailand, he go to Japan, and all that. 84 years old. Myself, a young man, and they have to reach on the path of sins. They're striving endlessly, but they work with peace, with joy. That's the energy. That's the choice they have. You see that? That's the choice they have. The joy of serving. The joy of seeing people walk on the path. The joy of seeing people transform their suffering. It gives you a lot of joy and gives you the energy. If without that, I don't think 84 years old man can travel like continuously. Suppose we have a 21-day retreat this year, but now he had to cancel because he had many trouble. Many of his itineraries packed.
I'm not going to do it.
They won't do it next year, so that not conflict with his U.S. tour.
What got canceled?
The 21-day retreats in Palm Village. Normally with 2 years we have 21-day retreats with mostly with the people that have been long time in the practice. And OI and many, and they come and they join the 21-day.
And they canceled it?
They canceled because of his packed schedule for traveling and teaching in U.S., in Asia, in many other countries. And when I read it, I say he have to have some kind of a certain degree of enlightenment on the path. Because of this. So when you look at this office and you relate to that, to the real human being, and you can see. That's why they enter all this path, that all of this here, you see. They must have a lot of strong samadhi. So that's why last time I told you that as common people, you become when you become aging, you are run out of insight, you burn out of in your insight. But as a practitioner, you become your insight become more rich. Because this, you reach you, the more you become. Aging, the more you become more mature, you become more insightful because of your practice. But in a common life, you use your energy too much and you use your and you wear out your memory burn out, wear out. And you either lost your memory or easy. People come here every time we have a lot. have a lot of things. We practice mindfulness, but a lot of things left behind. So. So you see that you see the more if you truly practice, you will see you experience this. If you truly dedicate to your practice, it's not a religious thing. It's things that we can grow, we improve or not improve, but do we make our insights more mature?
So yesterday, put this out there to see if I'm on the right track. Yesterday when it snowed, or whatever day it was, I can't remember already.
Sunday.
Monday morning, I had to get up and do the snow blower and shovel. And so
I have this trouble with my arm. So I was like, oh, I don't really want to do this. So then I went out and I started to do it. And then I went, okay, snow shovel meditation. So then I just went very mindfully mm-hmm. shoveling and really feeling this arm and then using my body differently and a rhythm and all that. Mm-hmm. So then I started to enjoy myself shoveling. Mm-hmm.
See, when you have mindfulness, you can use skillfully with your body and you pay attention to your body because our body have the language of the body. And if you mindfully, you can use your body in a the body can last for a long time.
Yeah, because instead of resisting it, going, I don't want to do this and it's going to hurt, then I just started listening to that and doing it carefully, mm-hmm. mindfully. Mm-hmm. And I got it all done and it seemed like it went faster, actually.
Yeah, that's what happened. When you have mindfulness into your work, it's more effective, more productive too. And your body is have its own insight. I call it body insight. And because we are not, sometimes we're not able to reach there or understand that inside of the body.
So we can use every little thing like that.
Yes, yes.
To work for mm-hmm. this path.
Mm-hmm. So that's why last Saturday, I say that in Buddhism, nothing is waste.
That's where I got that from.
When you have your mindfulness, nothing is waste.
Okay.
But especially when you have this in the path of sins, you reach that path of sins, you see the miracle of life. You sit in one place and you can see 1,000 worlds at one place. 1,000 cosmos, million cosmos. Because everything is in you. Everything is in you, but in us. But we have run. We have wandering millions of years. So that's why in Buddhism, every time we practice, it invites us to be back. Meditation is to invite you to come back to yourself on your cushion where you are, that where you can discover yourself. Because you know why? Because we are all made up of these four elements I told you. And that four element is everywhere. But it's also in us. You see? The four, the wind, the earth, the fire, the water. It's everywhere. So that's universal. But ourselves is universal. See? So Buddhism, the teaching of the Buddha, it's very profound. The more you practice, the more insight you have, the more you can see how profound that is. It is the universal insight. It's not belong to any religion. It's not belong to Buddhism. Also. It's a universal insight. So once we remove ourselves from the ego, from the body, you are everywhere. You see, you are everywhere. Why? I say you are everywhere? Because you are earth, you are fire, you are wind, you are water. You are the universal. You are everywhere. So you don't limit yourself. I have to say, I'm only this body. You make the reconciliations with earth, fire, water, and wind. So this path of sin allows you to see that. Allow you to not only see but experience that directly. That's why they say joyous moment on your path. You allow you see that you are connecting to the world and you are the world. But you have to meditate and see that and experience that. I cannot meditate for you, you know how they say. and
meditation by proxy.
The teacher can guide you, but the teacher cannot see that for you. Just the teacher give you the guidance. But the teacher cannot give you insight. I have to tell you the truth. When I realize that, and I walk on my path. I respect, I pray gratitude, but I walk on my path. I make my effort, and you too. I don't want to say anything that to deceive you. You have. That's the truth. You have to. I can encourage you, I can support you, but I cannot walk for you, and you cannot walk for me. And even my teacher, or even my closest teacher, he cannot walk for me. And he cannot see this on the path for me. But he can guide me, he can give me, he can encourage me. And that is the teacher's role. The teacher's role is to encourage, to support, to give you a push. But the teacher cannot transmit you the insight. You have to make the effort in order to reach this scene. You have your own difficulty, and I have my own difficulty, I have my own obstacles, and you have your own. It's okay to have all that. We don't deny that we have our own difficulties, we don't deny that we have our own weakness. Everybody have their own weakness, their own aspiration, their own affliction. But the difference is whether you're honest with yourself and working on the path. And that's the difference. You are honest with yourself and you are on the path. So that the practice is to be honest with yourself and to make an effort for yourself. And taste the transformation for yourself. And that is where you you have confidence in yourself, right? Beth?
This that you described, this first stage, it seems like a very elevated state. And it's only the first level?
First grab.
Okay.
First grab. That's why I say it's a lot of work. That's why it's profound. That's why we have all this preparation, you see? We have learned the accumulations, we have learned the preparations, and all the good deed that you prepare is for this. Yeah. To come into a complete maturity. We don't do anything for the nonsense or the nonsense purpose. We have something there, an aim there for us. So that's why I always emphasize that you have to make the effort. And nobody can make the effort for you. If someone loved you dearly, still cannot. If the Buddha loved us, the Buddha loved us dearly. In the sutra, it describes the Buddha loved human as the baby just born from the mother. How can he cannot transfer? He can. If he can do that, everybody already enlightened. You see, already enlightened. He loved all sentient beings, but the one thing he can leave behind is the teaching, it's the guidance, the map, so that we can follow that map and walk. That's the only thing he leave behind. He loved us so much. How can you see someone burning? We are living in the realm of burning. The Buddha say that in the realm of burning. Dục giới. we always burn by our desire. If he see that, how can he don't love us? He loves us. No discrimination, regardless of race, regardless of country, regardless of nation. But he still cannot liberate of us. So we have to make that effort to liberate ourselves. We think the Buddha already passed away physically yet, but he's teaching. He still be with us here. With his energy, with his teaching. So today I just want to finish this, the path of scenes. Two more paths to go on this. Now you have to work more harder as we proceed.
How many more stages are there?
Ten.
Ten.
Nine more. Nine more. Nine.
Nine. Mm-hmm. More.
Nine boomies. This is only the first stage of the Bodhisattva. We have to strive more, harder. Strive, but non strive.
You know, I have a question. Lately, I've had a hard time getting my body to settle down when I go to meditate. And I'm kind of used to my mind being restless, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. It's different for me to have my body, like, I just want to keep getting up, physically standing up and doing something, and then sit down and try to start. Mm-hmm. And do you have any suggestions for...
Just recognize it. You know, at least you recognize, and you recognize that you are at this moment, you're not, your body is not at rest. Mm-hmm. Just pay bare attention to it. And that's the energy. You see the energy, unrest energy in you. Mm-hmm. That burden, that burden your body, your mind. So you see that unrest energy and just pay attention. Attention. And when you see that, and then you just close your eye. You know, when you sit, close your eye. And don't resist. Because once you resist, it becomes stronger. Whatever. That's the law. Whatever you resist, it's become, you feel it. So you resist to that energy, and you get, it gets stronger. So just recognize it, and give it some embrace. And when you already see it, it will subside itself. Because we're afraid that we don't see, able to see, and we don't recognize. That's what it's been killing us. But once you recognize it, pay attention to it, but bear attention, but don't react. Then this will be subside self. So if you don't welcome that energy, you just recognize it. And then slowly, it takes some time. For example, the fan is turning. But the fan, when you turn off, it's still turning, but it takes some time to slow down and to make it stop, right? So the energy is there too. Mm. And if you can, and give some mindful breath to that, yeah. And then it will do the transformation itself.
I mean, on Saturday, when I was talking about physical pain, though, you don't go into it, right, because it just intensifies. Mm-hmm. So you just acknowledge and embrace in the same kind of way.
Yes. The more you resist it, the more it get more pain.
Mm-hmm.
You see? The more you internally resist, then you get more pain. But you just let it go. Let it go and let it be. And it will come to the rest place. Mm-hmm. But then there's a threshold that you have to cross that threshold of pain. And just sitting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody have any other questions? When you practice, you will have you come, if you truly practice, you come, you will have some insight to it. You have some questions to it. Because you practice will encounter many things. Sometimes resist, sometimes pain, sometimes all kind of stuff happening when you practice, because we have been neglect our practice for a long, long time. So now we come back and practice, and our habitual tendencies resist to that, and you will encounter many agitations. So you have to be mindful and able to embrace that and work with that in order for a certain time for body, for your body to adapt and to be at ease. Yeah. Okay. Any question? Okay, so we will stop here and do our sitting. So as you sit in, pay attention if you have any encounter, any unease or any hesitations, and bring it up. And you know, and when we have class like this, you can share, and many people benefit from that too. And that's this collective insight, and insight of the practice. Okay, so thank you for your listening, and thank you for your. Some of you have been sharing your insight. So I invite to stop a bell so that we can stop here.